So let's get into a Green Manifesto for Northern Ireland. That's how it's entitled. I'm going to start with you with the renewable heat incentive. You send your manifesto. We raised issues with the design of the renewable heat incentive when it was introduced in 2013.
That's right. I raised a question with Arlene Foster. I asked her, was there a perverse incentive to be energy inefficient? We were told in the answer that it was assumed that people would be energy efficient, that installing energy efficiency measures was cheaper than installing renewable systems, and that basically there was nothing to see here. Now, I've recently asked...
But you were talking to people at the time, weren't you? Who said to you, there's a way of being inefficient here. There's a way of milking this.
Well, that came to our attention and we raised the question. But even if you go back
and
as far as...
And then did nothing about it.
Well, if you go back even as far as 2011, when the original consultation took place, we were actually raising the issue of energy efficiency then. We said that energy efficiency measures should be put in place before any renewable systems could be installed.
But let's talk about 2013,
Stephen. If we had those audits before the systems were put in place, we wouldn't have had people heating empty barns.
I get that. But in 2013, there were some people in the community saying to you, look, this scheme's being exploited, and you did nothing about it.
Well, I raised it with the minister. We've actually sought the advice she was given. We've asked it essentially through FOI and have been told that to give us that information could affect the quality of future decision-making.
Is Arlene Foster's future decision-making?
Well, this is coming from the current Department of the Economy. So future decision-making of any ministers. But we think it's ridiculous that you can't see the advice given the minister. I think given the need we have for transparency with this whole scheme, and I certainly hope it's something that the public inquiry will look at.
But you have put this information into the public domain that in 2013, there were members of the community coming to you saying this is wrong. This is being exploited. You raised it with the minister and then you...
At that point,
a little poodle, you went into your bed and lay down again.
Where were
your teeth?
At that point, we weren't hearing anything about the type of exploitation that we're hearing about heating empty
sheds.
Or burning. But we were hearing that there was a perverse disincentive. And as I say, from as early as 2011, we sought to have energy efficiency measures.
But you keep going back to 2011. Given how much it's cost us now that we know... Do you think you need to apologise to people because they came to you in 2013, they pointed this out to you, you didn't scream about it, you didn't make a song and dance about it, raised it with the minister, took the answer, moved on.
Well, I think...
What an oversight.
Well, for a start, I was the only MLA to raise it at all, so...
Moved on.
But if you also look at the information the department had, what the department and what the minister had was that I didn't have was information... and power. So if you look at the fact that the department had been contacted by HM Treasury, Her Majesty's Treasury, they'd been told that there was a need to cap the scheme. They then also had been contacted about the introduction of regression in the GB scheme, and they had the power to introduce these measures. Now, what I didn't have was the power, and I didn't have at that time that information. So I was the only MLA who raised it at all. We as a party had raised it from the very inception of the scheme. But the minister, who had both the power and the information, did nothing.
You see, and I'll move on from this in a moment or two, but you're taking credit in your manifesto for having spotted this in 2013 and having raised it. You can flip that around and saying that one of the biggest financial scandals Northern Ireland has ever seen, you were given information about, and you kind of moved on.
Well, as I say, we
other MLAs didn't spot it. Other MLAs didn't know about it. You did. You had the heads up, and you moved on.
So
what a pity.
I did more than any other MLA and the minister. And I think it's right to put the blame with Arlene Foster, with the department, because she had the information from the Treasury. She had the information from her equivalent department in GB. She had the power to change the scheme.
She would say she didn't have the information. She would say it wasn't passed on to her.
Well, if you take the... And I know you played it in your programme. If you take the question session I had with the then head of Energy Division in February 2016, he said when I asked why... when you consulted on cost controls, you didn't introduce them. And he said, that the minister decided the priority was introducing a domestic scheme. Now, I find it incredible that the department could only manage one priority. It appears that it was a ministerial decision, and I know the newsletter has recently obtained documents that suggest it was a ministerial decision. The head of energy division at that time suggested to me it was a ministerial decision, and I believe the public inquiry will establish it was a ministerial decision not to implement cost controls, and we have to ask why.
Well, and obviously the DUP may dispute that, and I'm sure they will when they come on the programme for their turn. You want to bring the renewable heat incentive back?
Well, I think there's a big if.
That's another thing in this manifesto. You're going to bring it back.
What we want to do is introduce a windfall tax. So you've raised the point of £1.60 for every £1 of wood pellets bought. What we would do is have a 100% windfall tax and that extra 60p. Our calculations suggest that would bring the scheme back under control, in which case we'd still, if we brought it back under the original controls, we'd still have the money coming from Great Britain for an RHI scheme if we could set up a scheme that was competent.
So you would bring a windfall tax in, which would essentially take back any profit anybody was making from this scheme?
It would take back the profit on the cost of wood pellets. So what it would mean is those who are using the scheme legitimately would still be incentivised because they'd effectively be getting their fuel paid for. So it would still meet its original intention, which is promoting the use of renewable fuel. But what it would do for those people who are heating empty barns as we speak, they would be out potentially thousands of pounds. And I would make no apology for that statement, because anybody who deliberately sought to abuse this scheme deserves to be punished for it.
What about honour and keeping your word?
Mm-hmm.
Because there were many legitimate businesses that mm-hmm. looked at that scheme, saw that Arlene Foster actually had mm-hmm. written to the bank saying these payments are guaranteed. They went out and they made investment. They bought equipment. By the way, sorry for all the drilling around here. Clearly, people in this building don't understand we've got a live radio programme going on, but that's another thing. And those people will have thought to themselves, the government entered a contract and Stephen Agnew, leader of the Green Party, thinks you can just rip that up. No. Doesn't matter.
And this is where our proposal is different from Simon Hamilton's proposal, which I believe his proposal is illegal. I think he knows it, and I think he did it for electioneering purposes. But the difference with a windfall tax, it doesn't rip up the contract. We don't change the contract. That wouldn't be legal. What it does do is introduce a tax on what have been shown to be abnormal profits.
No, but those profits were built into banking plans. Some people approached the bank and said, here's what we're promised. So therefore, over a 10-year term, we're going to get our money back in 10 years. So you would be robbing those people who entered this genuinely, would you not?
I do have sympathy for those who entered it genuinely, obviously as somebody who has promoted renewables. But there is a matter of public interest here. And the payback period you talk about of 10 years is reasonable, and that would still be achievable under a windfall tax. It'll be different for every individual depending on circumstances. But what is not reasonable is a 60% rate of return, in other words, payback in 2 years and then 18 years of profit. That is not reasonable.
And that's what the contract said.
That's the purpose.
But that's what the contract said. Should it not be that if government makes a mistake, they at least keep their word?
Well,
they change it for future applicants?
The problem is, hold on.
If you take, because I've got the list, and I can see some farmers in there who are drawing down massive amounts of money, but they've probably got massive farming businesses in Northern Ireland, poultry farmers, etc. If they entered this in good faith, saw a rate of return which was exceptional, but it was by the government. Why are you saying to them, tough? It was a contract, but tough.
Well, to do nothing wouldn't punish the government, because as we've seen, effectively, Arlene Foster hasn't been punished. We'll see if she gets punished at the polls. The people we'd be punishing is the public. The £500 million or thereabouts that could potentially be wasted, that's going to come out of health, it's going to come out of education, it's going to come out of the services that people rely on. So I do believe there's the public interest that outweighs the individual interest. Now, if we were just completely scrapping the scheme and completely selling those people out, that would be wrong. What we're doing is putting in a measure, putting in a windfall tax that would mean there was still a reasonable rate of return, but not an unreasonable and exceptional rate of return.
And if it means some business is going under, that's a price to pay.
I don't believe that would be a case. It'd be a very foolish business model if the sustainability of your business was reliant on you keeping your heating on 24 hours a day.
I spoke to an expert in the field who said some businesses invested many tens of thousands of pounds in equipment.
That's right, and the rate of return, as we say, would if we return it back to the original scheme, would be in the region of 10-12%. But that for any business model is sustainable. So anyone who's got themselves in a position where a rate of return of 10-12% isn't sustainable.
You're the only party. I'll move off the renewable heating scheme in a second or two, but you are the only party, certainly that I know of, that you're kind of going against the public mood, and you're saying we would bring this scheme back.
Because we want to make the point that it wasn't renewable systems that did wrong here. That, you know, it wasn't that the technology was bad. We'd invested in a sort of bum technology, and wasn't that a big mistake? What was bad was the implementation of the scheme. What was wrong was, in my view, the deliberate omission of cost controls. Although the public inquiry will establish that, but what wasn't wrong was the need to shift from fossil fuels, which are polluting, which are deteriorating in terms of their numbers, and switching to a low carbon alternative. That was still right. That's still what we should be seeking to do. But we have to bring the costs under control first.
Sure. But of course, if you were to bring the scheme back, let's remind ourselves what actually happened with this scheme. What happened was GB were paying, the government in Westminster were paying a fraction of the cost, right?
They were supposed to be paying all of the cost. Yes, they were.
Well, they sent a note to say that they wouldn't be paying.
They would cap it at...
Correct, cap it.
So what the first 4 years was 25 million. They said, here's 25
million. That's right, that's right.
So
but
the original
that,
scheme, yes. And when Arlene Foster introduced it, she said it was a 25 million pound scheme. That was the budget.
So,
that's what
so
was
of course
spent.
The GB scheme is closed now.
No, the GB scheme still continues.
No, but for new applicants.
It's closed in Northern Ireland. It's still open for new applicants.
So if you were to bring back, a new scheme to Northern Ireland, who's paying for it?
The UK Treasury. The scheme still operates in Great Britain. People in England, Scotland and Wales can still gain from the scheme, can still avail of the scheme. And what we're saying is if we brought the cost back down to the original costs, ensured that public money wasn't being spent, we would still take the money from the Treasury and we would use it for renewable heat. We wouldn't just simply forgo that money, which seems to have been lost in all this.
The Greens are running 18 candidates in this election, one in each constituency.
That's right, yeah.
You got 2 seats last time round. What will success look like this time?
Well, we got our highest ever vote in May, and the recent Lucid Talk poll suggests that we'll get 45% increase in vote on top of our highest ever vote. Certainly, if that was to happen, I would see that as successful. We're in a situation where the Assembly is reducing from 6 to 5 seats. There was some... It was bizarrely larger parties shouting, you can't reduce the seats, it'll affect smaller parties. But nobody's actually predicting that the Green Party will lose any seats. And I am hopeful that if we do see that swing...
Out of 18, what would be success and what would be failure, Stephen?
Well, I think we're one of the only parties predicted not to lose any seats when the majority of parties are going to reduce.
So if you stood where you were.
So, well, if we come back to...
16 rejected, 2 in, that would be successful.
If we came back with 2, we would have a stronger team in the proportional assembly.
Fielding 18.
But Stephen, I'm not resting on my laurels. I do want to see gains. I do want to see our vote go up. And if you look at East Belfast,
Maybe thought we could hear some more drilling. Every single
I'm surprised, Stephen, you haven't asked more questions about that and had that stopped.
Every single day we go to those people and we say, you do know we have a programme on at 9 o'clock in the morning. Every single day. Could you do something about it?
Could I do something about it? Well, if your good listeners re-elect me, I will certainly look into it for you, Stephen. I will ask questions of ministers and we'll see what they do about it. Some, or who knows? Maybe I'll be a minister. But we are looking for gains. And as I mentioned, East Belfast, where we were 7 for 6. We came 7th out of 6 seats and came quite close. So if we've seen the type of gains that have been predicted for the Green Party, we could see a gain, for example, in East Belfast.
Let's not talk about your constituency areas now. You wouldn't want to do that, would you?
Well, I would. You might not want me to.
Yeah, and I don't want you to, because you know it's against the rules. You're going to protect, you say, we will protect Northern Ireland from Brexit. How are you going to do that? That's a big promise.
Well, first of all, I was one of the litigants in the case that secured a vote in the Parliament before Article 50 could be triggered. I'm now taking what's known as the Dublin case to demonstrate that Article 50 is reversible. The assumption has been at the minute that once we trigger Article 50, we leave. And the problem with that is if we get a good deal, what people say is a good deal, we leave. If we get a bad deal, we still leave. We have no negotiating power and we have no choice. What I'm seeking
to... That's what people voted for.
No.
People were asked, should we leave? And they said yes.
Well, let me give you a scenario, Stephen. Run with me on this. If you and I owned a house together...
God forbid.
In some parallel universe. And we agreed to sell it. And that's grand. We're both in agreement. We're going to sell the house. And I come back and say, Stephen, our
house... If we own a house together, but I'm sleeping on the left-hand side of the bed.
Yep, no, that works for me. And if we're selling the house and I came back and said, Stephen, our lovely house in Fantasy Island, I've sold it for £50,000. And you went, what? That's why? What did you do? And I said to you, well, Stephen, we agreed to sell the house. You wouldn't accept that. It wouldn't be good enough. So what all we have done is we've agreed effectively to leave Europe, but we haven't agreed the conditions. We haven't agreed the price. And what I'm saying is we should have the option. If the EU comes with a deal and the UK people and government say, we don't like it, we have the choice to remain. And that should be welcome to those who voted to remain. It should be welcome to those who voted to leave.
So you would run a second referendum, would you?
We would have a referendum on the final deal. And we think...
So you would run a second referendum?
Well, I would say it's a first referendum on the deal. We've agreed to sell the house. Now we have to agree the price.
But if the deal isn't good enough, you would run a referendum on that?
I think we have to. I think we should have to give the people of the UK a choice. But first we need to establish in the courts whether or not
Stephen,
that is legal. But Lord Kerr, who drafted Article 50, has said that Article 50 is reversible.
But this comes back
UK.
To principle again, doesn't it? It's nearly like those people who signed up and were legitimate businesses to the RHI scheme, and you want to thump them. Now, for those people who voted in the referendum, and a significant proportion of them, in fact, the majority throughout the UK, wanted to leave Europe, and now you're going to stab them in the front by saying, we don't like that result, so what we'll do is...
If we were rerunning the referendum on whether
That's
or not
exactly
we should leave... No, we're not. It'd be a referendum on the deal. Do you like the deal, yes or no?
And if not, what would happen?
If not, well,
we
that's
wouldn't
the
leave.
Point. If... Well, we could go back and renegotiate. That is an option.
And then what?
And also what
if
it does...
If we don't get a deal,
what
like,
it does
what happens,
in advance, what it does in advance of any deal is strengthen our negotiating hand. Because at the minute the EU's going, we don't care if you like the deal
if
or not.
If we don't
this
get
suits,
a good...
This suits our 27 member states. And whether you like it or not, you're leaving. That's the position we're in. We have no cards to play. We have no negotiating hand.
But if
what
you like it or not,
do,
the majority of the people in this country, in the United Kingdom, voted out.
And the majority of people have
so we are leaving, aren't we?
To remain. It would appear that we're leaving. What I'm saying is we need power in negotiations, we need options, and we need more democracy, not
and
less. And I don't believe giving people a vote on the final deal is somehow undermining the democracy.
Ultimately, if
it's
we
giving
didn't,
people more choice and more of a chance to have their say.
Ultimately, if we didn't get a deal we liked, what would happen?
Well,
would we stay in?
We've two options. We can renegotiate, but there will come a point where the 2 years runs out, and that would be the choice put to the people. So,
and what would happen
if we were at the end of 2 years and we made it clear, you've two choices here: you can accept the deal, or you can reject it. But rejecting it means remaining. Then that would be given the people of the UK that option. That choice.
It's a second rerun of the referendum.
It's not a rerun. It's a
come on.
It's a referendum on the deal.
So the net outcome, Stephen, you would be, despite the fact that people voted for Brexit, you would have a way of keeping us in.
People would have the option, and the people of the UK, not me, not the Green Party, not Stephen Agnew, wouldn't have the choice. The people of the UK would have the choice. And why would we deny them such a say?
So rerun the terms of RHI, important decision? Rerun the referendum.
Why would we deny the people of the UK a say in such a division? I go back to it. If somebody says, if people agree we're selling the house, you don't just take any offer you're
given. What's wrong with Brexit?
For me, there's a lot wrong with it, and we're already seeing the impact, the devaluation of the pound, and the impact that's having on
food
prices.
Stock market didn't collapse like all the doomsday predictions.
Well, Brexit hasn't happened yet, Stephen. I think that's worth pointing out. All we've had is the referendum and the result, and your favourite term, the direction of travel. But what we haven't actually done is left Europe. So some of those consequences will kick in after. But. You know, we've seen the issue of the border on this island. We've heard all of the assurances from the political parties that there won't be a hard border. But when you ask them, and I have asked Arlene Foster this again when she was First Minister, then what would the border look like? How can the UK control its borders in the one hand and have a soft border on the island of Ireland? And I've yet to hear one politician answer that question.
You would have unemployment here.
I would have unemployment.
You would halve
oh,
it. You
half
would cut
it
by half, wouldn't you?
By the 15,000 jobs created through the Green New Deal?
The last time I looked, unemployment stood at 31,600. So you're saying you're going to bring in 15,000 high-quality jobs. You would cut it by half.
Yeah, well, we want to see an investment in a retrofit scheme. We want to see an investment in a retrofit scheme to bring people's homes up to a modern energy efficiency standard. This is something you'll know because I've been in this programme for a number of years talking about the Green New Deal retrofit scheme. What we have is a situation where we have 44% thereabouts people in fuel poverty in Northern Ireland. And Stephen gets a glass of water.
Would you like some more water?
I would love more water,
You can have mine.
We'll share it, Stephen. You know,
we're ready in the same house together. We're not sharing water, Stephen. It's going too far. 15,000 jobs. How quickly? This is in your manifesto.
Yes.
Implement fully the Green New Deal Insulation Scheme, creating up to 15,000 high-quality jobs.
So quickly? We would insulate 30,000 to 35,000 homes a year. Over the lifetime of the scheme, if it operated over 15 years, we would like to see the all houses in Northern Ireland brought up to
modern energy efficiency. It's 15,000 jobs over 15 years, is it?
No, not over 15 years. That would be over the lifetime of the Assembly.
Create 15,000 jobs over 5 years.
Yes, with this investment. Thanks very much. Sorry, I didn't mean to be cheeky to your staff. Yes, we'd put this investment in. It's approximately $33 million a year. This was part of the Green New Deal proposals that were put to then-Minister Nelson McCausland. $12 million was budgeted for a pilot, and that money was diverted not to an energy efficiency scheme, but a boiler replacement scheme instead. That, for my view, was a mistake. That, what it does instead, is heat the air above homes, rather than help people live more comfortably in our homes. And I think we've seen enough wasted heat in by this Assembly.
I was going to get my calculator out there. So you say high-quality jobs. I don't know. What's a high-quality salary?
Well, we know the average wage is around about £24,000-£25,000 a year. I don't have a figure for the average salary for these jobs, but the 30, if you're doing calculus,
15,000 jobs times £25,000, that couldn't be true.
Well, the thing you're not calculating in the scheme,
$375 million, it says here.
The thing you're not calculating in the scheme is that it would be a partnership between the public and the private sector. So the original Green New Deal scheme was about getting an initial government investment to leverage private money. So the way the scheme would work.
So you wouldn't create the jobs then, someone else would?
No, I think the stimulus by the government would ultimately create the jobs. The way the scheme would work is
15,000 jobs at 25 grand a year.
Well, I didn't say there were 25 grand a year. I said
you
I
said
didn't
high
have
quality,
figure.
And I asked you what high quality was.
Well, I said the
so
figure.
So what would they be paid at high quality jobs?
I don't have that figure. I'm happy to come back on the show another time with the figure. It's not a case we haven't sorted through.
There was
a business plan.
$375 million a year, Stephen. Farcical.
There was a business plan put to the Department of Social Development by the Green New Deal Coalition, which included the likes of the CBI as well as trade unions.
You wouldn't
and
create
Friends
anywhere close to 15,000 jobs, would you?
I think that's inaccurate, Stephen. As I say, the government investment is approximately between 30 to 35 million a year. But it would.
But you need 375 million a year.
But what that does is give the security for the businesses to invest in the scheme. The way it would work for the homeowner is the homeowner gets the energy efficiency measures up front.
You say the government how much?
Pays them off. 33 million per year. So the homeowner gets the energy efficiency measures up front and pays them off as they save.
So the 33 million a year that you say that would be the budget for this.
Mm-hmm.
That would actually, your high quality job would pay £2,200 per year.
Yes, but that's
your 15,000 people.
Not factoring in
pay
the private investment.
£2,000 a year divided by 52, you'd pay them 42 quid a week.
That's not factoring
a high quality
in,
job.
That's not factoring in the investment that's coming in from the private sector. The government money is a stimulus and a certainty for security for the private sector to invest in a scheme whereby the homeowner gets the energy efficiency measures up front and they pay it off effectively as a loan while they save on their heating.
We
bills.
Always have an exchange about numbers, don't we, when we're doing this. You say you would introduce a properly calculated living wage as outlined by the Living Wage Foundation. How much would you pay?
The current calculation is £8.45 per hour. That's calculated by the Living Wage Foundation. And how it differs from the minimum wage is it calculates the wage based on what is believed to be the minimum reasonable standard.
So what would that be giving people a lift of?
It's currently just over £1 an hour extra. For those who are currently on the lowest income.
It's 17%, Stephen.
Yeah.
So you would impose a 17% increase in business staff overheads.
If you look at Oxford Economics study on the living wage they did for NICFA, now this was based on old figures, it's a few years old now, but what by their calculations, the extra money in our economy, the extra spending power acts as a boost to business. So at the same time, yes, business overheads are going up.
17%
demand's going up. So the figures based on the figures at the time, there was over 200 million in terms of increased wages. But once you take out sort of tax, national insurance, etc., there'd be over 100 million more in terms of people's spending power in the Northern Ireland economy. Their estimate at that time.
But you do concede you would impose a 17% extra cost on business throughout Northern Ireland in terms of their staff wage bill if they're paying a minimum wage, correct?
With the outcome being that there'd be between 1,500 to 2,500 extra jobs. Now, as I say, they're
based on... Where do those extra jobs come from?
Over 100 million increased spending power in the Northern Ireland economy.
So this is on top of your 15,000 high-quality jobs?
That's right.
So now another 2,500 jobs?
Well, say these are based on old figures. There haven't been an updated report. But the principles remain the same, that whilst there will be an impact on business overheads, there will also be an increased demand by through the increased spending power of consumers. So people have more money in their pockets, they spend it locally, and we do know that people in the lower end of the income spectrum are more likely to spend their money in the local economy. So we can rightly predict that money would be spent predominantly in the Northern Ireland economy.